All right, good afternoon. This is a meeting of the title setting board, and the date is October 18th, 2017. It's 1 o'clock p.m. We're meeting in the Aspen Room at the Secretary of State's office, 1700 Broadway. And seated to my right on the board today is Glenn Roper from the Attorney General's office, Sharon Eubanks, Director of Legislative Legal, and myself, Suzanne Steyert, Deputy Secretary of State. And we're here on two measures today for rehearing. The first one is 2017-2018, number 48, state legislative redistricting. And if the proponents could first just come forward and identify yourselves so that we know you're here for the record.
Hi, Ben Larson from Ireland, Stapleton, Pryor, and Pasco, here on behalf of the designated representatives of 48 and 50, Kathleen Curry and Tony Larson, who are here behind me.
I'm Tony Larson with the League of Women Voters.
And I'm Kathleen Curry, proponent of the measure.
All right, so both proponents are present. And Mr. Gruskin, you have filed a motion for rehearing. And for the record, Mr. Gruskin, with permission of the board, is appearing by phone. So why don't you go ahead and enter your appearance and lead us off.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Gruskin, appearing on behalf of the two named objectors to the title, Mr. Duray and Ms. Banks. And let me just say to the board and the proponents how much I appreciate your willingness to allow us to appear by telephone. I've had business meetings scheduled out of town for this day for quite a while and couldn't reorganize my schedule. So I crafted the motion for rehearing on initiative number 48, not knowing whether or not we would be permitted to appear by phone. So it is, I think, fairly thorough and fairly self-descriptive. Madam Chair, would you like me to address all issues or just the single subject issues?
Let's start with the single subject, and then have you also gotten the proponent's response?
Yes, Mr. Larson was kind enough to send them to me, as was Mr. Ward.
Okay,
so I have received them. Thank you.
So if you want to incorporate those first, or if you just want a chance to respond, either way is fine.
Well, let me just, I'm not going to walk the board through the single subject specifics, except to say that we believe that number 48 has at least two single subject issues, the first being the conversion of the role of the Supreme Court, and the second dealing with the issue of a panel of senior judges and its effective modification of the provision in Article 6 that limits the role of judges serving in any other public office. As to the first issue, I think my pleading is descriptive. Mr. Larson's response raises the question of whether or not the language that had been incorporated in the 1974 amendment, which is reincorporated in their measure, somehow displaces any single subject concern. Let me just say two things. Number one, the single subject requirement wasn't in place in 1974, and therefore this issue was never tested. And like many measures from Tabor on back, there were many provisions that were proposed to voters that were multi-subject, some of which were included in the Constitution, accepted by voters, including Tabor. So the fact that the language about the role of the Supreme Court is in the Constitution is really of no moment. In addition, as the Court knows, the Supreme Court has held in the decision In Re 1996-4, a title challenge that considered whether or not the repeal and reenactment of Tabor violated the single subject requirement the court held that if the underlying measure being repealed and then being reenacted is a multi-subject measure, then it is of no consequence that the measure is being reenacted. The whole point is at the point at which you repeal something in the Constitution and then put it back in there, if it violates, if it being the new measure still violates the single subject requirement, the fact that the language pre-existed the initiative really is irrelevant. And the cite for the case to which I'm referring is 916 Pacific 2nd, 528 at pages 532 to 533, where the court holds exactly that. That's a 1996 decision. So we believe that the language that exists in the current reapportionment provision of the Constitution is not a defense to a single subject challenge to a measure that repeals that language and then reenacts it as part of a measure that has other objectives. Other than that, I think that our argument on the role of the Supreme Court and the changed role doesn't require any additional explanation. And we think that the fact that the senior judge panel will change and by necessity violate the cited provision in Article 6 of the Constitution, Article 6, Section 18, makes it a second subject, and we would ask you to deny the proponents the title they are seeking to maintain and have them redraft the measure without a single subject violation.
Any questions, my board?
I do have one question, and for the record, before I ask my question, I just have to note that Mr. Gruskin has been retained by the Committee on Legal Services to represent a member of the General Assembly in a matter totally unrelated to this proceeding or these particular initiative measures, and so I just needed to note that for the record. Mr. Gruskin, in terms of the argument regarding the role of the Supreme Court and whether or not that's a separate subject, would you say that if the proponents had chosen to draft their measure in a different manner, not as a repeal and reenactment, but rather perhaps an amendment or perhaps an entirely new section, but left the existing language in Section 48 regarding the role of the Supreme Court for redistricting in terms of their process, would you say that in that instance, then perhaps you wouldn't have be making a single subject argument?
Thank you, Ms. Eubanks. I can't answer that one with any sort of authority because I'm not sure that I've considered it sufficiently. I only know that they drafted it in the way that they drafted it as a repeal and reenactment, and therefore, at least as it stands right now, this is squarely within the confines of Supreme Court's decision in 1996-4 as a repeal and reenactment, and therefore could be rejected as a single subject violation.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
Yes, I have a question on the second issue about the role of the senior judges. And that is, have you identified any Colorado authority that defines or explains the meaning of the term public office as used in Article 6?
I'm sorry, who's the question coming from?
Sorry, this is Glenn Roper from the Attorney General's office.
Okay. There is authority as to the meaning of public office. I can't say that as of this time that I've identified authority in terms of what it means for purposes of Article 6. Section 18, other than to say that it would most likely be given a plain meaning if the Supreme Court were to consider it. And plain meaning seems to me pretty hard to argue that an office that is appointed and compensated isn't a public office. So the answer is no, I don't know of any authority that where the court has identified the meaning for purposes of Article 6.
Well, I guess I have another question about that. I mean, it seems that your argument that it's unconstitutional, I'm just trying to tie up what that has to do with whether it's a single subject or not. It seems that we set titles all the time that might not be constitutional.
Well, the reason it is a single subject problem is much like the reason that the proponents used last time around of the Supreme Court nominating commission for purposes of screening their redistricting commission appointees was a problem, because it fundamentally changes the nature of a role that is specified by Constitution and intended to be something other than a political screening group. Just as the court noted that we rely upon the Supreme Court nominating commission to be neutral and devoid of political involvement, we certainly rely upon the judiciary to do and have exactly that same role. So it isn't so much that it violates the Constitution, and I apologize because I probably said that was a reason, as if it changes the nature and the reliability and the apolitical nature of our judiciary by thrusting them right in the middle of what the proponents readily admit is maybe one of the most political processes around. And if the act last time was of a single subject violation, we believe there's no reason why having judges who may be sitting on cases that may or may not involve political issues, there's no reason why that wouldn't also be a single subject violation.
But it seems that's because we're drawing on other statutes. I mean, if we had judicial elections in Colorado, maybe we wouldn't be having this same discussion about how they're independent. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how that makes it a second subject. I mean, I understand how it might change the way people think about the judiciary or the way it operates, but I'm struggling with why that's a second subject.
Because it forces voters into a double-barreled analysis. Do I want redistricting done by a commission, and am I willing to sacrifice an entirely independent judiciary in order to make that happen? And to the extent that is a decision that they don't have to make because it is the issues can be considered separately, they ought not be forced into that type of decision just because the proponents have sought to replace what they acknowledge now was a single subject violation last year with another body that raises exactly the same issues.
Okay. But if you take your argument one step further, in terms of the role of the judiciary and the idea that the voters expect them not to be involved in any sort of political process, then if you had this measure in terms of a repeal and reenactment, but creating the same appointment process there is now, which involves the Chief Justice, would you then be making the argument that the Chief Justice involvement would be a separate subject because that's contrary to this idea, the notion that the judiciary isn't involved in a political process?
Well, the role of the Chief Justice under the current system and under the hypothetical that you pose is not to screen the members, to undertake a fundamentally political role in addition to a judicial role. The role of being an appointing authority is something that the Chief Justice undertakes for a variety of commissions, and then when and if she considers the decision of a commission, she undertakes a judicial role. Note, though, that what Article 6, Section 18 prohibits is not the role, but an additional office. So there is no point at which the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, by making appointments, has accepted another office. There's no particular compensation provided for that role. There's no appointing authority for that role. So that doesn't comprise a public office that raises the issue for voters of whether or not they're willing to compromise the judicial independence for the appointing authority that the Chief Justice undertakes. Now, it may well be that there are multiple single subject issues that were or could have been raised in 1974 had the single subject requirement been in place, but it wasn't. Therefore, you all are in the somewhat unenviable position of getting to decide this question for the first time. The most you can do is look at last year's decision and know that there is a benchmark beyond which you cannot go, and certainly injecting a body to make political decisions rather than judicial decisions is one of them.
And so under your theory, there could be no judicial involvement other than the current system in terms of the Chief Justice based on how you distinguish the two processes, whether it's a screening committee versus an actual appointing authority.
No, I don't think that that's inherently the case. I think the reason that this is problematic is because the goal of this screening process is, as the proponents say on their website, to find the most independent candidates available. And therefore, there's a political role, as opposed to finding the most capable or people who meet the necessary qualifications or something that is neutral. There's clearly a goal of trying to find those individuals that meet the political needs of the commission, and that is a separate undertaking from what the Chief Justice does under the current reapportionment structure and what the Chief Justice or any other judicial officer could do under a different appointing authority structure. I'm only commenting on what it is that these proponents have structured, and they've given a series of judicial officers an inherently political role.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Gruskin, under the current system, what does the Chief Justice have to consider or take into account when nominating members to the Reapportionment Commission?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure I can be as authoritative on that. Mr. Larson may actually know. I don't believe that there are specific criteria.
Well, there's an affiliation criteria, isn't
there? Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah.
But that's simply a matter of the Secretary of State's records checking to see whether or not someone meets that criterion.
Right. Any other questions? No. Let's hear from the proponents if you have anything you want to add to what he said or what you filed.
Thank you. So I want to start with the first point that was raised, and that the point on 48 about the role of the judiciary and changing it from an appellate court to a trial court, I think the point that needs to be addressed is the fact that the argument that movements are making is that it is a second subject because of the unconstitutionality of it, or because of the change. And so therefore there must be a surprise, there would be surprise to the voters. And that's his argument, that it's the change that is the second subject. It's clear on the papers, that's what he's arguing. I don't know that when the movements filed it, if they realized that the language isn't changing at all, honestly. And so the point that we're simply making is it's not a second subject because there is no change in how the judiciary is being used in its review of the plans that are presented to it. And so how would that be a second subject? And as far as the Tabor case that he's pointing to, I haven't honestly read it, but I suspect that the reenactment was something that fell outside of the sort of standard single subject analysis. And here, what we're doing is we're including provisions that allow the court to approve redistricting plans. That is directly related to redistricting. So by just looking at what it is, the subject of it, it's not a second subject. And this sort of issue that Mr. Gruskin is raising and I think confusing people by is that, you know, because it's unconstitutional, it's a second subject. And I think that's not a consideration right now. But when his arguments sort of fail, then he goes back to the unconstitutionality of things. But the point being, this is neither unconstitutional nor a change from the existing role of the Supreme Court, so I don't see how it can be a second subject.
Well, I think his objection isn't, well, he also objects to that, but about this new panel that's going to be set up of senior judges.
Yeah, so I'm on point one. So on point two, as to the senior judges, I would say that his argument, and I want to just pull the motion for rehearing. The heading is that number 48 violates the Constitution. That's his argument. Okay, first of all, we're changing the Constitution, and whether it violates the Constitution or not in this instance is not a single subject question in and of itself. But in any event, as I said in our papers, the current role that the court, I want to take a step back. So when Mr. Gruskin was pressed on the fact that, you know, constitutionality isn't really an issue, then he changed it to the fact that we are changing the role of the judiciary. Okay, so if we parse that out, that's not in fact true. We're not changing the role of the judiciary. The judiciary right now plays a more direct role in who is appointed to the Reapportionment Commission. And the Reapportionment Commission in and of itself is a political body. So to try to parse out, okay, well, they weren't political then, but they're political now, I don't think is accurate. And so as far as his argument that it's a change, I don't think that's true because we are not changing the role that the judiciary plays. And in any event, there's no... The authority that he cites that it's a separate public office is not accurate because that case was about whether sitting on the commission itself constitutes a public office, and we are not doing that here. The judiciary is nominating to a public office, which it currently does. In addition, there are many instances in which judges currently sit on commissions. And so I guess there are several instances where judges are currently violating the Constitution, but at least with respect to our initiative, again, we are changing the Constitution. And so I think that's what he's trying to do is confuse the issues in order to manufacture a single subject question. And as far as 132 and 133 goes, which were which was the decision rendered last year by the Supreme Court, the court was very specific. The court was concerned about a change to a constitutionally established existing commission that had discrete purposes, which was the Judicial Nominating Commission, and changing the role of the Judicial Nominating Commission from its existing charge. That is not what we're doing here, and the court in no way said, no, it's unconstitutional, or excuse me, it's a second subject to use an entire branch of government to nominate to a commission. That is an inaccurate reading of 132 and 133. So I think that those cases are not relevant to the board's analysis.
Any questions? Mr. Gruskin, do you have any response to that?
I guess I would just say that I'm not trying to confuse the board. That's not my intent, and it's not, I think, the purpose. The point of a single subject inquiry is whether or not there is an issue that will force the voters to make a yes or no decision on what they would deem to be separate subjects or separate topics that bring to bear separate values. And I believe that the nature of our argument in both regards is that that is precisely the conundrum that's being forced upon voters by these measures in the way that they are drafted, and that they could be drafted such that voters didn't have to make that choice, and that the decision in 132, 133 of last year was in no way about whether or not an entire branch of government is somehow implicated. In fact, what it was all about was whether or not voters would want to change the mission of the Supreme Court Nominating Commission as an entirely apolitical body and give it a political mission. And the Supreme Court, at least the majority of the Supreme Court, decided that that was a violation of the single subject requirement, and we think that that decision informs, at a minimum, the decision that we're asking you to make today based on this motion for rehearing. So thank you very much for the opportunity to respond. I don't think, unless you've got questions, that I'll use up any more of the board's time.
All right. No, I'm in here. Okay. Discussion?
Okay. I'll go ahead and start on the discussion. I do understand Mr. Gruskin's argument regarding repeal and reenactment. I'm pretty familiar with the case that he cited regarding the repeal and reenactment of Tabor, and the fact that there are provisions in the Constitution that predated the single subject requirement that was approved by voters in 1994, that once you have an initiative measure that's modifying, repealing, and reenacting one of those provisions that may contain multiple subjects from a single subject perspective, that that measure becomes subject to the single subject requirement. I think that the nature of the portions of number 48 that Mr. Gruskin has pointed out to the board in terms of the role of the Supreme Court, as well as the involvement of the panel of senior judges for the selection process of some of the appointees, I think those can be distinguished from the types of provisions that were involved with the Tabor repeal and reenactment. The Tabor repeal and reenactment, Tabor involves fiscal year spending limits, election provisions, voter approval for various tax and debt measures. There's a provision on local governments giving back certain mandated programs, a variety of things, all sort of separate and distinct. I think the two provisions that have been brought to our attention today still relate to redistricting, that they aren't just separate and apart, that you're dealing with the role of the Supreme Court. It's the role of the Supreme Court in the redistricting, in the review of the redistricting plans. And I see that as being an important difference and distinction that helps in terms of the argument that the measure contains a single subject. Not that I don't necessarily agree with Mr. Larson's position that just because it's doing the same thing that's in the Constitution right now, especially in terms of the role of the Supreme Court, I don't think that necessarily gets you around a single subject issue. I mean, any time that you're dealing with a constitutional provision and you have a measure that's proposing to change it, then you have to deal with single subject. But I think in this case, I'm comfortable that both the role of the Supreme Court in redistricting, as well as the role of the panel of senior judges in the appointment process, still relates to redistricting, and the measure contains a single subject.
I think Sharon said it very well, and I would agree.
You want to make a motion? Or do you want to wait till the end?
Right. Well, however you want to proceed.
Yeah. Why don't we do a motion on this?
And on the then single we'll subject? Move, yeah. Okay. So I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing on number 48 in regard to the single subject argument.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
So that takes us to the language. And Mr. Gruthkin, you had a couple of things on that also, if you want to talk about those a little bit.
Sure. The issues raised as to the sufficiency of the title set by the board relate first to the appointing authority for two-thirds of the commission. Right now, the title only refers to the question of the members' partisan affiliation. But as laid out by our motion for rehearing, the proponents in their political dogma go on at some point about the dangers of having political insiders, political operatives, and political parties involved in the appointment process or making the appointments. And to the extent that this is such an issue, we think it only makes sense to indicate to the voters that if what they think is that they're going to somehow take those insiders, operatives, and most notably the political parties out of the process, that they are, that it is something of a pipe dream, because it is under the measure either the leadership of the party or the party chair, depending upon party rules, that will be making these appointments. So we think it's a fairly easy fix to include in the phraseology that relates to the membership, with four of whom are registered with the largest political party and appointed by the state's largest political party. And then as to the next phrase, four of whom are registered with the state's second largest political party, to add, and are appointed by the state's second largest political party. We think that will inform voters in a significant way without increasing the length of the ballot title by any significant measure. And we'll lend to the understanding that proponents have said really is all important because it somehow their measure is geared to defanging those political influences, when in fact it actually empowers and authorizes a non-constitutional officer who takes no oath whatsoever to make appointments to this governmental commission. Secondly, we believe that simply using the language that the measure adds competitiveness to the criteria.
Can I stop you and ask you something about the first point?
Sure.
You don't think the title has to say who the four that aren't registered need to be appointed by?
Well, honestly, it's such a Rube Goldberg contraption. I don't know how you can do that. Not the title, the appointing process.
Right. Okay.
But if there were a way to encapsulate it, certainly would not object. Not at all, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
No. I appreciate the question. I'm glad that you gave me a chance to catch my breath. The second issue relates, as I said, to the actual rather than the purported role of competitiveness in the process to be undertaken under number 48. It is incorrect to say that the measure adds competitiveness because it leaves voters with the impression that it is every bit as substantially considered as any of the other criteria, contiguity, compactness, preservation of communities of interest. It simply isn't true because what the measure provides by its express terminology is that competitiveness can be considered only after meeting the other requirements of the section. So it is absolutely possible, and I would argue likely, that having met these other requirements, the commission could decide that competitiveness is simply not within its reach to foster and will set district lines based upon the existing criteria without reference to competitiveness. So to the extent that competitiveness is referred to at all, it should be clear that it is considered only as the last of all criteria to be considered.
Okay, so let me ask you this because I struggled with this last time. Do you think it'd be better to, and I saw the kind of the language you offer about only if the other factors, do you think if we use that kind of language, we have to say what those other factors are?
I think the construct under which the court would consider this is that as legislators, voters are presumed to know the law they are amending, and therefore I don't know that you need to throw in compactness, contiguity, and preservation of communities of interest. But if the proponents believe that that's helpful and the board believes it's helpful, we sure wouldn't oppose that.
So do you think it's better to note it, or is your preference that it is just left out because you think it's so unlikely to happen?
I guess to the extent that we're talking about the actual number of words added to the title, we're really not talking about very many words, are we? The issue, of course, would be that those three discretion or statutory factors are in addition to the one person, one vote requirement and Voting Rights Act requirements, and whether or not you believe that if you add in the statutory factors, you also need to add in those mandatory factors that are either constitutional or federal in nature.
Okay. Any other questions?
Would it resolve your concern if the title, instead of saying the criteria used by the commission, said the criteria considered by the commission? because they have to consider political competitiveness, whether or not it actually ends up getting used in the decision making may depend on the other factors.
I think that, you know, what that change does is probably in terms of, you know, the standard that gets applied, the voter who is quickly reading the title on a petition, I don't know that that's a distinction that carries with it much difference for that voter, and I would say that probably isn't a change that gets over the hurdle of the express language of the measure, which is this is the very last thing the commission can consider and employ.
And then just to be clear, and I apologize, you may have said this to Suzanne already, would your concerns be satisfied if that phrase, that entire phrase, adding political competitiveness to the criteria used by the commission, if that phrase were omitted, would that resolve your concern about the title?
I think it would resolve the concern in connection with this last argument, my motion for rehearing, yes.
Sure, okay.
And if I could pipe in on the first issue about indicating in some manner who are the appointing authorities for the various commission members, taking into consideration your suggestion for the appointees by the two major political parties, and the difficulty, understanding the difficulty of trying to describe how the last group of four commissioners are appointed, would it be possible, I mean, because basically the last four are appointed by the eight other appointed commissioners, and whether or not it's, without getting into all the details about the panel of senior judges that makes recommendations and all of that, whether or not a solution to that issue might be that you could indicate that they are appointed by the other eight commissioners from a recommended pool of applicants or, you know, something along those lines without getting into all the details. I'm just curious in terms of your thoughts along those lines.
Well, that's a really interesting thought, Ms. Eubanks. I think you could include a reference like that. I think the term appointed may be inaccurate because, of course, under one construct, if they can't agree upon them, they just start striking names, and then they settle upon the four that are left. So I'm not sure that I entirely agree with the language, but I certainly have no problem with the construct that that the decision about the identity of the final four is left to the other eight reapportionment commissioners.
Would selected be a better word? Because, I mean, ultimately, the last four are in some way selected by the other eight.
Probably determined is more accurate, because you're right, the negative process that is provided for in the measure is a definitely a decision-making undertaking, but I don't know if it's an active selection, because that suggests something affirmative. But I think determined or finalized or something of that nature, which leaves open the specifics about the process, would probably work.
Okay, thank you.
The proponents want to respond to.
Thank you. You know, I would say just initially, you know, we are committed to, you know, fair and accurate titles, but you know, we want to respect the length. The titles are already fairly long at this point. And so with respect to the first issue, which is the composition of the commission and the political registrations of the commission, I think the way it's drafted currently, we understand, the voters will understand the political composition of the commission. And so as far as how we get there, I don't think that that's worth adding the words necessary to fully explain it, because it is critical to understand that how we get there with respect to the four independent commissioners to us. And simply saying something to the effect of that the eight pick the four independents is not reflective of truly what happens here. And I think would probably inaccurately suggest that the parties are just picking the four others, which does not reflect their independence when they are, when you have a pool of 20 selected by the judges, and then it's a sort of like a striking process by which you come down to the four. You know, that's critical to the measure, and so you know, if we're going to go down the road of trying to explain it for the four and the four that are registered with the parties, you know, we feel like we need to explain it with the independent commissioners, and to do so, you've got to actually dig into it to be accurate, we feel. And so I think the preferable route is to just stick with the way it is, because voters will understand the political composition of the commission with the language that's in the title. So that's, I would suggest keeping it the way it is with respect to the first issue.
Second issue?
The second issue, which deals with competitiveness, again, I don't think that it's accurate. I think the basis of the motion for rehearing was that we were somehow reflecting that competitiveness was a requirement, and the title doesn't reflect that. The title says that it's a criteria to be considered. That is true.
It actually says used to the criteria used by the commission.
Yeah, I think that's still the same. If you have a pool of criteria, you can choose to use them or not to use them. That's what I think that's what the definition of a criteria is, or at least as I understand it. Criteria is different than an element or a requirement, because you can choose to use it or not to use it. And we could tweak that language, but I don't feel like reflecting it as the final factor is necessarily accurate, because the measure requires the commission to do those things after the other, I believe, factors are considered. So that's a bit of a nuance there, that I think the measure, the title as drafted, informs the voters of what they need to know, that competitiveness is being added to the considerations, and the fact that competitiveness is being added is important to us. And so striking it entirely, we would oppose that, and we think the way it's drafted, it balances accuracy and brevity, and will not confuse voters or misinform them of what's happening.
Okay. All right, thank you. I'll start. I'm not really strongly attached one way or the other to who appoints. I think functionally it does make a big difference, but I'm not sure that it's an important factor to tell the voters. So I'm not really sure where I land on that. I'm probably ready to do what either of the other two want to do. I am concerned about the competitiveness because I think that it could be used as a big selling point, or voters could attach on to that notion and not be advised that it may not have any impact at all. The way it's drafted, it looks like it's going to be this criteria and it's going to be used. And the fact is it might not be used. So I like Mr. Gruskin's language about a final factor that the commission can consider after every other factor is satisfied or something along those lines. So that's where I am.
So as to the first issue, I'm inclined to leave the language as we have it drafted, rather than trying to identify in detail here how they're appointed, as to all three groups especially. I think I agree with Suzanne as to the second, as to the competitiveness as well. I think the only tweak I would make to Mr. Gruskin's proposed language is the can consider, which makes it seem like it's an option, and I don't think that's consistent with the language of the proposed initiative, which says the commission shall maximize the number of politically competitive legislative districts. Those are my initial thoughts on the two issues.
In terms of the whether the title includes the appointing authorities, I'm in agreement with the other board members. I don't think that it's necessary to include that information in the title. That information is going to be available through various sources, and it sounds like it'll probably be perhaps a major point of the campaigns for and against a measure, if it gets on the ballot. So I think that the voters are going to get that information. It's going to be much more meaningful than being in the title. I just don't think that it's necessary to do that. In terms of the political competitiveness phrase, I'm in agreement with the concern. Right now it makes it sound like this will definitely be used by the commission, and so I'm open to changes. I don't know if we have to go to the extent of saying it's the last consideration, but I'm definitely open to discussion in terms of how that language might be tweaked to make it more accurate in terms of the priority it's given, understanding to the extent possible it's supposed to be applied.
Did you want to comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to make the point that Mr. Roper made, and so it's been made. But if we're going to go down that route, we're okay. You know, we understand the concerns, but we want it to be made clear that, you know, it shall be considered, which is, you know, somewhat different than the others. So.
Okay.
So would you like a motion as to the first?
No, I think we can just.
Or do them both.
I think if we're going to.
We should just put up language and
okay.
then.
And
great.
Then go from there.
So what was the suggested language?
Well, we don't have it yet.
We haven't suggested anything.
You want to give it a shot, Steve? So adding political competitiveness to the criteria
Well, could we start with replacing used with to be considered? Now, that doesn't address the, you know, is it the final factor?
Well, I don't even think you can say final factor because you can't even consider it until every other factor is satisfied. So final factor almost implies that it gets some consideration, where really it gets considered only if everything else gets satisfied. It might never get considered, right?
Yeah, I could maybe make a suggestion. We could change the beginning and sort of start over and say something to the effect of requiring the commission to maximize political competitiveness after considering,
after satisfying. Don't they have to satisfy every factor first?
Those are factors, is my understanding. So, yeah. You know, they consider them and they use them as they choose. And I think that's the actual word used as factor. Yeah. So, I think it's more accurate to say requiring the commission to maximize political competitiveness after considering the existing redistricting factors, or something to that effect.
Mr. Griskin, do you want to chime in at all?
I'm sorry, whose suggestion was that?
Is that the proponents?
Well, I think that the same suggestion was made last time. That is, that the measure should provide that it will maximize competitiveness. And the truth is, that was rejected by the board because of its politically loaded usage. And we would remind the board and reiterate the board's good decision of 2 weeks ago in that regard, and suggest that it would be error to incorporate that language now and to use it to obfuscate the fact that, as the chairwoman pointed out, this is a factor that may never be able to be used. And as a matter of fact, for many districts, just given the composition and the geography, won't be used. So to hold out that there's going to be a maximization of competitiveness after requiring other provisions is to deceive the voters, and we would supplement our motion for rehearing with the argument that such a rewording is deceptive. It's certainly a catchphrase, and it would mislead voters into believing that this measure will do things that it cannot, as a matter of demographics, do.
Yeah, and I think that was the discussion last time over that word maximize, so I'm probably not going to be in favor of going back down that road.
I thought that the way it was last time, maximize was used in isolation. It just said maximize political competitiveness. And we could go back and look at it, but the point was the other half, which is after considering the other factors, was not part of the way it was before. I mean, I think that's what the Constitution is going to require the commission to do. And, you know, if we want to work in to address Mr. Gruskin's concerns into what I just said, we could say requiring the commission to the extent possible to maximize, and then continue on with what I said, requiring the commission to the extent possible to maximize political competitiveness after considering the existing factors, after considering the existing redistricting factors.
Oh.
I mean, that's what it says at that point, and I'm trying to make it as concise as possible, but I believe that's exactly what the measure says.
Well, actually, the measure says to the extent possible after meeting the other requirements of this section. So rather than just considering the requirements, I mean, your measure says after the other requirements have been met to the extent possible, then the commission should be maximizing the political competitiveness.
I may be wrong, but it says considering the requirements of this section. And then so if you go up and look at this section, the what's above there does not say that you have to, you're required to implement each of those things. So the requirement is to consider them as factors. And so I do believe that that's different. And I think what you're saying is that the language below is saying that you are required to consider the others, and I don't believe, it's just saying you're required to comply with what's above, which says they're factors. I could be incorrect on that, but that's my understanding of it.
Well, it talks about it, above, you have compactness, about contiguous general election precincts, districts of the same house shall not overlap, refers to the equal population requirements in now 46.2. There is language about splitting the number of cities and towns whose territory is contained in more than one district shall be as small as possible. So I'm trying to find a balance of whether it's consideration of the other requirements or it's satisfying other requirements or meeting the other requirements. Because the direction I was trying to go with some language to replace the current phrase in the title would be something along the lines of requiring the commission to consider political competitiveness, comma, to the extent possible, comma, after meeting or considering other requirements. So that the idea that this is done after you look at the other factors and whether all of the other factors are binding requirements, I don't know. I have to rely on other people's expertise. But that's sort of the direction I was going, but I'm not quite sure how to describe the other, whether they're requirements, whether you go back to sort of criteria, or perhaps after applying the other criteria. I'm looking for some help here.
Well, he has after every other factor is satisfied.
And Mr. Larson, you're saying that not every other factor has to be satisfied?
So what I'd like Mr. Larson to say is that, and I may be wrong about this, but 4B in the new section 47 says, after meeting the other requirements of this section, that some of the other requirements are, for example, you know, preserve them within a single district wherever possible.
Right.
So saying they have to be satisfied may push too strongly in saying that it has to be possible to meet those before you go to political competitiveness, whereas the language here, you may have met that requirement once you've done it to the extent possible.
I guess just to trail on that, it's part three, you know, section three, consistent with the provisions of the section of this article, communities of interest, including racial, ethnic, language group, cultural, economic, trade area, geographic, and demographic factors shall be preserved within a single district wherever possible. So I don't want to make it seem like competitiveness is on a lower level.
But it is. It's the final factor.
Yeah. As far as the order of operation, that's I agree. I was talking about what word we're going to choose as far as consideration or factor or requirement. I don't want that word to understate it.
So would it perhaps be possible to say, again, sort of along the lines of the direction I'm going, that after applying the other criteria?
Yeah.
Because you're applying the criteria, and then it's, you know, to the extent possible, whatever, but you've applied them.
I agree. Yeah, that's and that's in the word criteria, I think.
And so whether or not, so it would say requiring the commission to consider political competitiveness, comma, to the extent possible, after applying the other criteria?
I think that we would be okay with that. I think the nuance in the use of the word criteria addresses the concerns we're all struggling with.
And Mr. Gruskin, do you have any thoughts about my proposed language?
Well, I'm just wondering why we aren't using the language of the measure. I mean, typically that's a default that the board goes to when the language is as unclear, both in terms of how it could operate and how it fits in with existing law. And I don't know why meeting the other requirements of the section rather than applying criteria isn't exactly the way you would want to word the title. That this isn't a question of, I mean, honestly, what B does is, I believe, neutralize the language about whenever possible. Those provisions are now requirements, and I think the easiest way to address this. I mean, the truth is, it is the final consideration. It's the after every other requirement or element has been addressed, its competitiveness. And voters ought not think that this is a measure that, in fact, is going to be geared to drawing competitive districts first. It's not. By its terms, it's not. And to use a more ambiguous description of that mechanism when the measure basically says that it isn't ambiguous. I mean, either after means what it typically means, or it has some other new meaning that the measure doesn't apply for. And I don't think that the title board has authority to decide that it has that secondary meaning, and ought to just say that the other requirements have to be met, and then competitiveness can be addressed.
So, Mr. Gruskin, how would you? Do you have language that you would propose or recommend instead of after applying the other criteria?
I apologize. This is a very interesting exercise.
I don't have it in front of you, but the measure says after meeting the other requirements of this section. We couldn't really just put that language in because this section wouldn't make sense there. But I don't know if there's something else we could say after meeting the other redistricting requirements.
Yeah, after meeting all other redistricting requirements. Considering political competitive district or politically competitive district.
Again, when you say after meeting the other requirements of the section, I think what that is saying is you have to comply with what's above. And you can't just if you say meet all redistricting requirements, that is construing what you have to do before as by themselves to be requirements. That's a nuance, and unfortunately I think if you wanted to just take this language in B, then you would have to walk through all of the nuances of what comes before, because B is just telling you you got to follow what's before. Okay, that's the way I interpret it. And so I don't want to have language that misconstrues what comes before as all being requirements by themselves.
Just for the record, this is Mark Kruskin. But the other requirements exist as a matter of the United States Constitution or federal law. And I don't think that the proponents are talking about either evading either. I've certainly never heard anything. And your measure doesn't speak to that. So clearly you're going to have to meet one person, one vote. Clearly you're going to have to meet Voting Rights Act requirements. And then the other requirements are provided in the section. And honestly, these are important considerations. Meeting one person, one vote, and meeting Voting Rights Act considerations are important considerations that the commission, I would assume, would not be insensitive to or willingly or intentionally avoid. And therefore, competitiveness really is about number 6 or 7 on the list of eligible considerations for the commission as to any sort of districting plan. And you can't, if you didn't intend that to be the case, you wouldn't have embraced the constitutional concern. You wouldn't have embraced Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. You wouldn't have embraced the existing boundary line considerations. And you wouldn't have embraced the 3 requirements above and indicated that the commission had to meet those requirements.
So, Mr. Gruskin, what would your thought be to, and just thinking out loud here, requiring the commission to consider political competitiveness to the extent possible after meeting the other requirements?
I would say all other requirements for redistricting.
Mr. Larson, any reaction to either of those, either after meeting the other requirements or after meeting all other requirements for redistricting? And the panel hasn't even talked about this.
I mean, as far as just walking back what Mr. Gruskin said as far as one vote, complying with federal law, yeah, I mean, it says that those things shall be done. But what I'm concerned about is that Section 3 says that they shall be preserved wherever possible. I mean, so that, I understand, we're not saying that we're not going to comply with federal law. I think that's a little bit, that's not accurate, what he said. So that the concern is Section 3, and if we just change the word requirements there to considerations, I guess I feel like it's more accurate as to what you proposed.
But wouldn't it be true that in terms of the items listed in subsection 3, that if a plan, those considerations are preserved within a single district wherever possible, then that requirement has been met? I mean, there is obviously you've still met the requirement, even though it's not absolute. I mean, and it may vary district to district, but as long as they've been preserved within a single district wherever possible, then that requirement has been met, hasn't it?
I understand that you can understand that nuance, and I appreciate that. But in just kind of hearing what Mr. Gruskin said, which is, I think, going to be one of his pitches, is that He's contending that we're changing Section 3 to be requirements. I think that's what he said.
I don't think that's what he said. I think what he's saying is that you're making it. You have embraced all these other areas of law in your initiative, so he's acknowledging that you're going to follow all these other areas. But the fact of the matter is that you have to meet all of these other areas first until you can even get to the extent possible. So it is required that you meet them all to the extent possible.
But he
and
said,
only until you get done with that can you consider competitiveness. I mean, my concern is that for the majority of Coloradans, we're never going to get to competitiveness. And to the extent that this is going to be central to the ad campaigns and the selling point, I don't want to mischaracterize something as being a huge part of an initiative when factually it's just not going to have a huge impact. That's my problem with it. So I don't have an issue with saying that the other requirements must be satisfied, because they do have to be satisfied. And yes, they have to be satisfied to the extent possible, but they still have to be satisfied.
I thought that I heard Mr. Gruskin say that he believes we are negating the extent possible language in Section 3, and maybe I was wrong.
Why don't you tell us what you were saying, Mr. Gruskin, instead of us opining?
I'm sorry, in terms of the point Mr. Larson was raising
right.
about meeting these requirements?
Yeah.
Well, honestly, I'd like to say it as well as you did, but I don't think I can. The notion is that each one of these are requirements. Each one of them must be met exactly as you laid out, Madam Chair, Chairwoman. And to the extent that there is then the ability to consider competitiveness, it will come into play. But it's not going to preempt anything else. It is, in fact, if redistricting is a meal, it's not the appetizer, it's not the entree, it's not the side salad, it's not the salad, it's not the dessert. It's the dinner mint. And maybe you get to the dinner mint if you still have room. And that's basically what we're dealing with. And it seems to me that the title ought to say something that basically connotes exactly the way you've approached this, Madam Chair, that this is possible only after everything else has been satisfied, and to the extent that some of them are conditional, after they've been satisfied to the extent they can be satisfied.
Well, and I think where I'm at, in terms of, you know, how the language in 4B is going to be ultimately interpreted by someone else, not us, if this measure were to become law, in terms of its impact on any of the other criteria, I think right now, and especially in light of the language of the measure itself in 4B that says, to the extent possible after meeting the other requirements of this section, I mean, so the proponents use the language requirements and meeting requirements, I would propose that the last portion of the language that I had initially proposed to say after meeting the other requirements for redistricting. And then that can include federal law, U.S. Constitution, whatever's in Section 47.
Right.
And I think that's consistent with what the language in 4B says.
Do you have any comment on that?
The only nuance is the other requirements for redistricting could be everything in the measure. I mean, this section is about composition of districts, but this kind of makes it seem like it's really coming after everything. But I think we could live with that.
We could say the other criteria requirements. I don't know. I think it's fine.
I mean, as Mr. Roper pointed out, you know, to have any sort of reference to this,
right?
Say this measure isn't very helpful, or the constitutional section number isn't very helpful. it's just hard from a voter's perspective.
What if we just changed for redistricting to for composing districts or for the composition of districts, something to that effect? It's one more word.
Again, I'm just trying to think in terms of from a voter's perspective.
I mean, I think they think that's what redistricting is. It's
drawing
district lines.
Right, but I mean, and so that's why I'm going back to how we earlier described it about, you know, like renaming the commission that redraws state legislative boundaries. I mean, I don't, you know, in terms of whether they think of the terminology of districts so much. We talk about redistricting in the single subject about legislative redistricting. Whether or not you say other requirements for redrawing legislative boundaries. Or, I mean,
I think we're okay with it. I understand we're
so you're okay
splitting
with
hairs at this point.
The language on the screen?
Yes.
Okay with? Okay.
Mr. Gruskin, did you want to take a last, do you want me to read it to you? It says, requiring the commission to consider political competitiveness to the extent possible after meeting the other requirements for redistricting.
I think that's an improvement. Thank you very much, members of the commission. Of the board, I'm sorry.
So you want to read it first?
Okay, so the question in the totality right now reads, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning state legislative redistricting and in connection therewith, renaming the commission that redraws the state legislative boundaries, changing the qualifications and methods of appointment of members of the commission, providing for the appointment of 12 commissioners, four of whom are registered with the state's largest political party, four of whom are registered with the state's second largest political party, and four of whom are not registered with either of the state's two largest political parties, requiring the commission to consider political competitiveness to the extent possible after meeting the other requirements for redistricting, prohibiting drawing plans to purposefully advantage or disadvantage any political party or person, specifying procedures that the commission must follow, including requiring that the commission's work be done in public meetings, and requiring the nonpartisan staff of the commission to prepare and present plans, and requiring the agreement of at least 8 of 12 commissioners to approve any action of the commission.
And so I would move that we deny the remainder of the motion for rehearing on number 48, except to the extent of the changes reflected on the screen on lines 6 through 8.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. That takes us to number 50, I believe. Yeah, 50. So if the proponents could just state your names and you don't have to come back up, but if you could just let us know whether they're still in the room.
Yes, Ben Larson on behalf of the proponents, Kathleen Curry and Tony Larson, proponents of 50 who are here in the room today.
Okay. All right, and Mr. Gruskin, you filed a motion for rehearing. Is there anything you want to add? And for the record, we can incorporate the other comments if you wish to do that.
I am going to do that, Madam Chair. I would like to just note that the second single subject argument deals with the qualifications of the commissioners in as much as it requires that a person not be a member of Congress or a candidate and thus creates a non-U.S. constitutional factor which is beyond the reach of the voters and will be used to attract voters even though it is unenforceable. And therefore, we believe it's the second subject and would ask that you deny a title to the proponents until they recraft their measure accordingly.
Okay. And so for the record, we'll incorporate all the comments and arguments from Initiative 48. And does anyone have any questions for Mr. Gruskin? Proponents have anything?
I would adopt my earlier arguments on number 48 with respect to the overlapping issues on number 50. And with respect to the point about changing federal congressional qualifications, first of all, so I think the argument is that because it's a federal constitutional violation, it violates single subject, but I don't think we're here today addressing whether something is or is not a federal constitutional violation. Second of all, I don't think it is a federal constitutional violation because qualifications for the commission by inverse do not somehow become qualifications for Congress. There are, I think, probably several dozens of instances where public officers, like the commissioners here, are prevented from holding other public office. That other public office would necessarily include being a member of Congress. So anytime, if you're going to accept this inverse argument, anytime there was a preclusion on holding other public office, for instance, on number 48, when Mr. Gruskin brings up the fact that the provision in the Colorado Constitution addressing judges holding other public office, that provision on this argument would be unconstitutional because they can't also sit on, they can't also be members of Congress. So I just think that argument is untenable and irrelevant in the first instance. So it's not a second subject.
Madam Chairman, may I respond?
Sure, go ahead.
The extension of Ms. Larson's argument is that you could be a, for instance, a state court district judge and also be a member of Congress, notwithstanding the fact that Article 6, Section 18 says that you can't hold two public offices. That's not the point here. The point is whether or not you can, whether or not the state of Colorado can set up an independent condition or qualification on members of Congress. And to the extent that the voters elected a sitting judge to be a member of Congress, under Article 6, Section 18, that person couldn't hold both offices. That was our point in the last hearing. And so while I appreciate the notion, it's actually very supportive of our argument here, which is that the state can't set up this condition, this qualification for office. That's not really the issue, though, in that the reason there's a single subject violation is that this will be used as I think I said in the motion, as bait, when it's clear that it can't possibly be utilized or implemented, and therefore it is a single subject argument because it will be used to lure voters when the proponents know there's no possible way it could be given any sort of effect.
I can give another example. The case cited about the Arizona Redistricting Commission that Mr. Gruskin relies upon, in Arizona there's a requirement under their state constitution that Arizona redistricting commissioners not hold other public office. It's a broader preclusion than here, but of course within that preclusion would be the preclusion against being a member of Congress. Again, to my understanding, that no one has questioned the constitutionality of that, and it is constitutional. And I think if we dug in even deeper, we would find lots of other instances where public officers are precluded from holding other public office, which would necessarily include Congress.
Can I just respond to that? Because I think it's important for the board to know that, in fact, the Arizona Supreme Court did address the very situation that Mr. Larson's speaking of, and they decided that a member of Congress was another public office and noted the fact that there are restrictions under the United States Constitution on what the people of Arizona could restrict. So he makes my point better than I did, which is that an attempt to... Now, the officers at issue in the Arizona case were not members of Congress. They were irrigation district directors and a tribal judge. And the court there decided that the irrigation district directors were, in fact, holding public office and that the reach of the people of Arizona was not so far as to the sovereign nations, Native American nations, residing in Arizona. So, but the dictum in that case and Mr. Larson are exactly at the same point, which is you can't do what you're talking about doing for members of Congress. I'm done.
Well, I would just say, you know, we can debate the federal constitutionality of this, but I don't think that's the title board's role in any of this. And if you know, if there is going to be an objection to that, that'll be dealt with. But that's not the role of the title board.
I do have one question for Mr. Larson. In terms of the argument about the Supreme Court's role and your reliance on the existing constitutional provision, the language about the Supreme Court's role in regard to the Reapportionment Commission, since now we're talking about congressional redistricting in number 50, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, this court, in terms of having the Supreme Court act in the same manner as it does with legislative redistricting, that is a new role for the Supreme Court, is it not? I mean, my recollection is that when the General Assembly doesn't act, right, I mean, things started in Denver District Court, I mean, and work their way up to the Supreme Court in an appellate role rather than in the role that the Supreme Court performs in terms of the Reapportionment Commission. And I just wanted to clarify that my understanding is correct.
Yeah, I mean, I think your understanding is correct, but the point being, I think Movement's argument is that you are injecting politics into the judiciary. And so, therefore, the judiciary must be, and therefore, you've got a second subject. So, the point is, the judiciary is already directly involved in this, and that role is
involved in
legislative redistricting, certainly.
Okay.
And so, the role of the judiciary. Voters aren't going to think, oh, the judiciary is wholly separate from politics, has no role in politics, and be surprised that we're going to ask judges to comprise a pool of nominees, because the judiciary is already involved at a political level in redistricting, albeit state legislative redistricting. So I don't think that the extension of that to 132 and 133, where the court was very focused on changing the charge of an existing commission, that was the concern of the court there.
So your argument is that the Supreme Court's role with redistricting commission, so in terms of legislative redistricting, they're already doing it in that instance, and so now to be also doing it in congressional redistricting, it's not really a change because they're already doing it in this other circumstance.
Yes, and I think the court's concern was, you know, with log rolling and people being surprised. We are on the face of it saying we're using judges for this role, and there's no surprise as to any purported drastic change to what the role of the judicial branch is. it's not doing, it's already injected itself into this this process, albeit at the state legislative level.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Any discussion on single subject?
Sure. even with the change, the involvement of the Supreme Court, similar to what it currently does in terms of the reapportionment, the legislative redistricting process. Again, I see the Supreme Court's role as directly relating to the congressional redistricting. I don't see that as a separate and distinct subject. And I would deny the motion on that ground. In terms of the qualifications for members of Congress, I just have a hard time viewing it as Mr. Gruskin advances the argument. I see it more of who's qualified to sit on this commission, not necessarily who's eligible to run for Congress. And so I look at it and understand it in a different manner. And for that reason, I don't believe that the measure does impose an additional qualification on individuals to be able to run for Congress. And for that reason, I don't think prohibiting current members of Congress or candidates for Congress from sitting on this commission, again, that all relates to the redistricting, and I see that all as part of a single subject. So I would deny the motion on that ground also.
I agree with Ms. Eubanks, and I would note that the rehearing motion doesn't make the argument about the changed role of the Supreme Court in the way that Sharon articulated. I appreciate her raising that so that we could consider that as well. But I even with that change in the congressional redistricting, I don't believe it constitutes a second subject. And then I agree as well with the Part B, with the eligibility to serve in federal office. And I think we're not trying to determine whether there would be a constitutional issue if someone was a member of the commission and wanted to run for Congress and wanted to challenge the statute were this to become law. It's just trying to determine whether that constitutes a second subject, and for the reasons that Sharon articulated, I don't believe that it does.
All right, I'm gonna make a motion.
Okay, so I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing on number 50 in regard to the single subject arguments.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That takes us to the language of the initiative. And Mr. Gruskin, is there anything you wanted to add beyond your arguments from 48?
Maybe he's asleep.
Did we lose him, Steve? Looks like he
dropped. I apologize.
Oh.
I'm here. I don't think that using your time to revisit arguments that have already been made would be a particularly good use of your time. I would note that the language in the title is slightly different as to competitiveness, but I don't know that the fix that you used for 48 can't be adapted for purposes of the title on number 30.
Okay. Mr. Larson, do you have anything you wanted to add?
No. I mean, I think I will adopt the arguments that I made previously, and I think we can endeavor to just incorporate the same changes.
So is it a correct?
The only difference I might note, Madam Chair, is that the measure number 50 uses adhering rather than meeting.
Could you say it again? I'm not sure I followed.
I apologize. Whereas number 48 talked about after meeting the requirements of this section, number 50 talks about
in the language.
In the actual initiative language, and I'm looking for the
it's
site
on,
right
it's on
here.
Page two.
Paragraph C.
Thank you.
Paragraph C.
I got it.
Yeah. I just wanted to call to your attention the slightly different language that I don't think changes really the construct of what you did on 48. It might change a verb or a noun or two, but that's it.
I do have a question for Mr. Larson in terms of sort of the difference of the language of the measure. In 50, it still seems that political competitiveness is after the other factors or criteria, but it doesn't appear to have the language about to the extent possible. Am I missing it, or am I reading it correctly?
Yeah, you're reading it correctly.
Okay, so that might be another change that we need to make to consider when we're changing the language. So I think where we ended up on 48 was about requiring the commission to consider. And I think in this instance, we're now establishing the criteria, including the political competitiveness. So whether or not we could stay with the existing language, but maybe add after political competitiveness and before the semicolon, adding a comma, or maybe no comma, sorry, to be considered. After, and again, I mean, we've used criteria, but then we've got the adherence to this, you know, subsection 1A, and then you have considering the factors listed in 1B. And so I'm not sure to be considered after the other criteria.
What did we say last time, Steve?
I think we said after meeting the other requirements for redistricting or something like that.
After meeting the other requirements for redistricting.
And I don't think we need the to the extent possible.
Right.
Based on Mr. Larson's comments.
Absolutely. Do you want to just say after meeting the other criteria?
Or whether we say... I don't know whether it should be adherence or consideration.
we use meeting.
Well,
we could just use meeting again.
But that was based on the language in 48, and the language in 50 has both adhering and considering. And maybe Mr. Larson has a suggestion in terms of.
I was thinking about just going on this one. It's, the other distinction is. This one actually says, after considering the factors listed in subsection 1B, so that kind of goes back to last time we were struggling with, it says the requirements of the previous section. So we've clearly got the words factors here, so we could say adding political competitiveness as a factor to be considered after the other redistricting factors. Might be
I don't think we need to add it because we added all kinds of factors. We just need to say it's including.
Or we could say requiring political competitiveness to be considered after the other redistricting factors.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just totally confused because your head note talks has the terminology criteria, and then you have factors, and
What if you were to? I'm sorry that I can't get this out more specifically, but allowing or requiring political competitiveness to be considered as the final factor in redistricting. After all other factors are considered is probably, which is more akin to what, where Mr. Larson was going, after all other factors are, have been considered.
So if we use the term factors in the new language that we're considering whether or not, then we also have to change criteria to factors up on line 8. Mm-hmm. I mean, because otherwise it's like apples and oranges.
Yeah.
I think that the title of 2-1-102 is criteria.
I know. That's what she's strong. If only the drafters would be consistent with their terminology.
I don't take credit for that.
I hear that complaint all the time.
I don't know that there's a huge distinction between criteria and factors. I think they, in my mind, they mean.
There's not. We just need to be consistent.
Yeah.
I
think if we just choose one.
Okay. And I'm fine with factors.
Yeah.
I do think that it's probably overkill at the end of the new language to say are considered. I mean, because you're already saying political competitiveness to be considered after all other factors. I think it's implicit that the other factors are all being considered first.
Okay.
And so the language would read, establishing factors to be used in drawing districts, comma, including political competitiveness to be considered after all other factors, semicolon.
If I could, the truth is the statute as it currently exists has already establishes factors. So using establishing as your operative term is a little misleading because it would lead voters to believe that there are no criteria, that it simply is done, as the proponent's website suggests, based upon the whims of political insiders, operatives, and parties. So I'm not sure that establishing really is an accurate reference here if you're going to reword this section of the title.
Well, I think that establishing was there. And also, the statute addresses considerations for judges. There were no factors established for any commission to draw congressional districts. So I think that it's accurate to say that we're establishing factors to be used in drawing districts because there were no factors for drawing congressional districts before this.
Would that be resolved if we said establishing factors for the commission to use in drawing districts?
I don't have a problem with that.
I think that works.
So then it reads, establishing factors for the commission to use in drawing districts, including political competitiveness, to be considered after all other factors.
It, just grammatically, it seems confusing to me.
Including
political competitiveness to be considered after all other factors.
Including consideration of political competitiveness after all other factors? I don't know if that makes it any more clear.
Well, I think you could break it into two phrases, perhaps. And you first say, establishing factors for the commission to use in drawing districts, semicolon, and then changing the including to say requiring political competitiveness to be considered after all other factors?
That's more accurate, and we would prefer that.
You have any thoughts, Mr. Gruskin?
I am just taking a look at the measure.
You're never going to do this over the phone again, are you?
I'm really going to try to avoid it.
Or we could make it a little bit more explicit and say requiring the commission to consider political competitiveness after all other factors.
I would say that the phrase works if the after all other factors is the lead into the phrase, because otherwise it gets lost in the construction that is and minimizes the fact that this again, to use my previous analogy, is a redistricting dinner mint. And, you know, I just remind the board that it requires adherence, not just consideration of the elements that are the mandatory factors. And so it really isn't accurate to say after considering those elements. I think if the voters are going to know that there are mandatory requirements that have to be met before and maybe in a way that will displace consideration of competitiveness, they need to know it through this phraseology.
So, 1B above, which is what C is referring to, says that, and you have to go back to the introduction of this section, the Independent Congressional Redistricting Commission and its staff shall, and then you go down to B, says consider the following factors without weight to any factor, and it walks through those factors. And then in C, it says, after adhering to those provisions. So this is very clear. You know, it's not saying that they're requirements. It's saying you just adhere to what's above, which is what I think the other one it says as well. But
well, it adheres. They're required to adhere to the 1A factors and consider the 1B factors.
Yes. So it's, yeah. But yes, it's even more evident that those are factors. And then it says maximize the number of politically competitive congressional districts. And so we have to walk back up to the beginning. So that really says the Independent Congressional Redistricting Commission and its staff shall, after doing those things, maximize the number of politically competitive congressional districts. So I don't know that what we have up here is accurate, because it puts it on a level that is below what's in 1B, in my opinion.
Well, maybe we should just.
I know the order of operation is. I know it's second in the order of operation, but they shall do it, and they must maximize the number of politically competitive districts. So I would be fine with addressing the order of operation, but I think it should then be more accurate with respect to what the initiative says.
But really, in this initiative, we're adding all the criteria, right? I mean,
some of them are existing law.
Yeah.
Are you saying that the political competitiveness in this statute could trump the 1B factors? Was that the point you were making?
No, I'm just saying that the order of operation is what it says it is.
Right.
And then after applying those factors, then they maximize the number of politically competitive congressional districts.
So you weren't saying that you read it as they consider the 1B, but then they have to maximize, under 1C, they have to maximize their politically competitive districts, even if that skews the 1B factors?
No.
Okay. So I like what Sharon suggested, just adding the active voice, keeping it how it is, but saying requiring the commission to consider political competitiveness after all other factors.
And I think that way it leaves it open in terms of whether it's adherence or consideration.
And I don't want to go there
in terms of that much detail.
Right. And I don't know how we respond to Mr. Larson's concern without getting maximized back in there, which we're trying to avoid. So
I wouldn't be in favor of that. I mean, for the reasons we discussed before.
So I think
keep trying.
I think I like the language how it's up there right now.
Yeah.
I think I've lost my maximizing argument, so.
You can still use it in the ad campaign, so.
And Mr. Gruskin, I mean, I know we haven't given you exactly what you were asking for, but any additional thoughts? Do you understand what how the language reads now?
I do. Thank you. I still think that the fact that this is the final factor, my guess is you're not going to see the proponents and their ad campaigns talking about this as a final factor. And at least in the context of petition signing, if not at the ballot box, people ought to know up front that it's the final factor rather than have to wait all the way through this particular phrase. So I think the wording is not so much the problem as the placement of the qualifying factor, the dependent clause of, you know, after all other factors.
You don't think if they've made it to this point in the title that they'll keep reading those few more words?
I think if that's the case, that there's no harm in putting it so that people understand that it is a qualified or conditional consideration rather than an equivalent consideration. So you all asked, so I thought I'd tell you. I think that the phrase is clearer if it is reordered just so slightly.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think, and understanding Mr. Gruskin's argument, I think the fact that we're using after all at the end, I think that gets the concept that this is the last thing that's applied. And to do it as Mr. Gruskin suggested would make it lengthier because then you've got to have a verb up in terms of after consideration of all other factors requiring the commission to consider the political competitiveness. And I think what we've got is just fine.
Okay. All right. You want to make a motion?
Okay. Because I think we've dealt with all the other issues on the. Okay. I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing on number 50 in terms of the remaining arguments, except to the extent that we've modified the language as it appears on lines 8 and 9 on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then do you want to read it?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and read it. So as it reads, it'll be a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning federal congressional redistricting and in connection therewith establishing a congressional redistricting commission to perform the responsibility of the state legislature to redraw congressional boundaries following each federal census, specifying the qualifications and methods of appointment of members of the commission, providing for the appointment of 12 commissioners, four of whom are registered with the state's largest political party, four of whom are registered with the state's second largest political party, and four of whom are not registered with either of the state's two largest political parties, establishing factors for the commission to use in drawing districts, requiring the commission to consider political competitiveness after all other factors, prohibiting drawing plans to purposely advantage or disadvantage any political party or person, developing procedures to be followed by the commission, including requiring that the commission's work be done in public meetings, and requiring nonpartisan staff of the commission to prepare and present plans, requiring the agreement of at least 8 of 12 commissioners to approve any action of the commission, and specifying procedures for the finalization and approval of a plan. We took a vote, right?
Right.
Okay. Then that concludes the meeting, and I think it's about 3 o'clock, 3:01, and we are adjourned. All right.
Thank you very much,
members.
Have a good rest of your trip, Mr. Gruskin.